That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome, everybody, to Furthermore with Amanda Head. It is Wednesday, April 10th. Happy hump day to all of you. I cannot believe it. I was thinking about this earlier this morning. We are less than 7 months away from the 2024 election. It's going to be held on the 5th of November, and so much is going to happen between now and then. The news cycle has been, if you are paying attention, then you know that it is making your head spin already. But we're going to try to make sense of all the news here on this podcast. And I have some amazing guests coming up for you today. The first one is going to be Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Some of you who watch the TV show, you have probably seen the Attorney General on our show. He is one of these attorneys general out there who is actually fighting back against the Biden administration and the Biden administration's perpetual habit of circumventing legislature, circumventing Congress, circumventing the Constitution to try to just do what he being Joe Biden, wants to do. And attorneys general like Andrew Bailey out of Missouri are just slapping him down time after time. So we're going to get an update from him on Murphy v. Missouri. That is the new name of what was Missouri v. Biden. That was almost, 2 years ago. May of 2022 is when that was first filed. That is the free speech case against the Biden administration regarding their coordination with social media, trying to get certain things censored and even taken off in some cases of social media. We're going to be talking about another cool $500 billion in student loans that Joe Biden wants to cancel out. And then we're going to be talking about this cute little secret parole program that the Biden administration is trying to muscle into the American governing system as a de facto immigration system. Of course, that should be going through Congress. Again, Joe Biden going around that. So we're going to talk about that with the Attorney General. I'm then going to have on Will Trockman. He is the General Counsel for Mountain States Legal Foundation. And he has this incredible case regarding UC Berkeley. Now, he went to Berkeley. He went there for undergrad and law school. So this is a school that actually matters to him. And like many Americans, our education system matters. But this is a school who has instituted a BIPOC-only day for their community farm that it's just off campus. And on Saturdays, white folks aren't allowed to come and enjoy it and plow the land and take advantage of all that this community farm has to offer. So we're going to dig in on that with him. I'm going to finish it up with Michael Markey, who is a candidate for Michigan 3. This is a guy who, you know, as you're going to hear him talk about, because we've spoken before, he has signed the front of a check and he has signed the back of a check. He is running because he is a father. He cares about kids. He cares about family values. And I think you're going to want to hear what he has to say. A little bit of news of the day before we head in. Just last night, this was some breaking news regarding Nicole Shanahan. You all might know that name. She is the woman, the former tech executive, I guess she still kind of is in the tech sector, who was tapped a few weeks ago to be RFK Jr.'s vice president. And a lot of conservatives raised their eyebrows because she's very liberal, and they were thinking to themselves, well, this sounds like a great plan, because that's going to make conservatives turn away from RFK Jr. And even people who are down the middle, independents, knowing what Nicole Shanahan stands for and the policies and people who she has supported in the past. Well, lo and behold, Nicole Shanahan, she didn't even hear it from Congressman Ro Khanna directly from here. She get from him. She gets a letter from CBS that asserts the notion that they got a letter from Congressman Ro Khanna saying that they intend to reach out to Nicole Shanahan to pressure her to step down from the number two on the ticket with RFK Jr. because it's only going to help Trump. Her presence on that ticket is going to help Trump, and they are trying to muscle her out of it. I'm telling you, Democrats love to talk about how they love women and they are pro-women, but boy, they will not miss a chance to elbow a woman out of the way if it means political success or potential political success on their part. So we've got some other news. Of course, the House Rules Committee earlier this week passed their FISA quote unquote reform bill out of committee. It's going to go later today to the House for a floor vote. It is a reform bill in name only. It doesn't do anything as far as the privacies and constitutional rights of American citizens. In my opinion, it's absolute garbage, and I certainly hope that it gets voted off the floor and laughed out of the chamber. We shall see. So we're going to take a very quick commercial break, and we'll be back on the other side.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, Attorney General Andrew Bailey led six other states in filing suit against the Biden administration's latest illegal student loan forgiveness plan, while the Supreme Court decided just last summer in a decision of 6-3 to strike down Biden's forgiveness program. Our own legislature also never gave Biden the authority to shift financial burden onto others. And while Biden's mental acuity isn't exactly what it used to be, maybe not ever, clearly, there are over 500 White House employees who surely have reminded him, but perhaps they didn't want to because they, too, want someone else to pay their student loans off. General Bailey, I appreciate you joining the show tonight. Your legal mind is always spot on. And I want to hit you with something that I just saw on your Twitter timeline that you just posted a little while ago. And I think that your story is similar to a lot of Americans who have fought for this country, who maybe didn't have the money to pay for their education, so they paid for it with blood, sweat, and tears, not too dissimilar to other Americans who maybe didn't join the military, but if they couldn't afford to go to school, maybe they got a small business loan, they paid for a work truck and paid off the loan for that. Why are American taxpayers paying off these loans for anyone? And why does Joe Biden think that he can step around this time and time again? He's been slapped down multiple times, and he keeps crying.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Look, at the end of the day, we can't let Joe Biden saddle working Missouri families or working American families with Ivy League debt. It is personal for me. Went to school on an Army ROTC scholarship, served my nation in a combat arms branch in the United States Army, deployed to Iraq twice, came home and went to law school on the post-9/11 GI Bill. So I paid for my school in blood, sweat, and tears and service to my nation. It was a privilege to get to do that. But what it taught me was that there's nothing free and everything needs to be earned, not given. And yet what President Biden is doing is nothing short of trying to buy votes and flaunting the authority of the United States Supreme Court in the process. When is the mainstream media going to call this what it is? A constitutional crisis. At the end of the day, President Biden tried this once before. We put a stop to it, went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. The court ordered him, forbade him from redistributing wealth without explicit authority from Congress. He has not obtained that authority. And now he's out campaigning saying, well, the Supreme Court told me no, but I'm going to do it anyway. The only rational explanation here is he's trying to buy votes because he knows he's losing to President Trump in the key demographic between 18 and 29 years old in recent polling. And that scares him. But we can't allow him to undermine the rule of law and violate constitutional separation of powers for his political ambition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to ask a question. I mean, it might sound rudimentary, but I feel like enough people aren't talking about this. If the issue is predatory loans, if the issue is predatory contracts, and these loans are so oppressive and so offensive, why isn't it the lending institutions that are held responsible?
Well, that's absolutely right. Look, there are consumer protection laws and contract law that would protect individuals from those kinds of practices. But none of those claims are being raised here. Really, what this is, again, is a redistribution of wealth from cultural elites who decided to go to college and take out loans to working families who are going to have to pay off those loans. Ask any working family or small business owner if there's such thing as debt cancellation. I guarantee you they'll say, no, there isn't. No one's ever canceled their debt. They had to earn everything they've gotten. And so what kind of example is the president setting here, not only by undermining the rule of law, flaunting the will of the United States Supreme Court by ultimately trying to create this kind of consequence-free environment where you can do whatever you want, you don't have to worry about the consequences, and somebody else will pick up the tab. That's not how it works. What we know is that the previous plan cost more than $500 billion. This plan is anticipated to cost even more than that because of the enormous breadth and scope of the cancellation program, but it costs Missourians up to $40 million in lost revenue because here in Missouri, the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authorities, who administers student loan payments and repayments. And so at the end of the day, taxpayers are going to have to foot the bill for that. Make no mistake about it. President Biden is going to foot Missouri taxpayers with a bill for his debt cancellation program. It's unconstitutional. It's illegal. We're going to put a stop to it again and hold him in contempt of court if he won't obey the lawful orders of the United States Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Speaking of unconstitutionality, I wanted to ask you, I think we're bumping up against, if my timing is right, about 2 years since Missouri v. Biden. It's now of Murphy v. Missouri. Can I get an update from you on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this case is the most critical First Amendment suit in this nation's history to protect our right to free speech on big tech social media platforms. What we know is that the federal government under President Biden's administration has coerced and colluded with big tech to silence American voices in violation of the First Amendment right to free speech. We've uncovered evidence that this coercive and collusive relationship was targeted at one viewpoint, and that's any viewpoint who dissented from Joe Biden. That is absolutely core political speech that they are targeting for censorship. The remedy in this country for disfavored speech has always been counter speech, not government censorship. So in other words, if President Biden and his army of federal bureaucrats didn't like what was being said on big tech social media platforms, they should have offered their own posts, not silence American voices. So we took them to court. We got a preliminary injunction nationwide on the 4th of July. We defended it twice at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. So the score is Missouri 3, Biden 0 in the fight for free speech. We just went to the Super Bowl. We were at the United States Supreme Court a couple of weeks ago and argued that case. And ultimately, I believe that the justice will be served and that the Supreme Court will uphold the text, history, and tradition of our First Amendment right to free speech and affirm that nationwide injunction. And we'll be back down at the trial court continuing to fight to protect our right to free speech.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah, the answer is always more speech, not less. But it seems like Media Matters doesn't agree with you on that, especially when it comes to the viewpoint, wherever that message is coming from. And they clearly don't agree with the viewpoint of Elon Musk as he operates X, which is more speech, not less. And you have filed a suit against Media Matters. And some people in our audience might not have heard about this case, but they were basically manipulating their algorithm so that controversial or salacious content bumped right up against, in the timeline, advertisements. Talk to us about this. And have you gotten any information from Media Matters? It seems like they're kind of stonewalling every step of the way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, make no mistake about it. Media Matters is a radical, progressive, tyrannical group. They're a not-for-profit that masquerades as a media watchdog, but they're absolutely a left-wing progressive advocacy group. And what they did was a coordinated, conspiratorial market manipulation to apply a corporate pressure campaign against prominent advertisers on X. They hate X because they can't control X. They, again, are dedicated to driving from public discourse any viewpoint they disagree with. it. This is a new front in the war for free speech. They hate X because they can't control it, and so they want to shut it down. One of the last bastions dedicated to free speech in America, Media Matters can't tolerate that. And so the question that I have is, under what pretense did they solicit funds and contributions from the people of the state of Missouri in order to commit this conspiratorial market manipulation? Who coordinated it and who benefited it? This is an investigation that I'm authorized under the consumer protection laws of the state of Missouri to conduct. And what we know is that the state of Texas, my colleague Ken Paxton, conducted a similar investigation, and Media Matters refused to comply with his subpoenas and sued him in federal court. And so they've got a dedicated history of declining to comply with state statutes and state investigations. So we've filed suit to enforce our subpoenas, and we're going to get to the bottom of it and hold wrongdoers accountable.
Good for you. Yeah, and it almost seems like there's a bumper crop of these organizations, not specifically Media Matters, but, you know, we always talk about how, you know, that which is illegal for the government, they farm out to private organizations and vice versa. And it seems like, especially for the Biden administration, they are farming out so much of this to private organizations when everyone knows that at worst it's illegal, at best it's unethical.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, at the end of the day, this is one of the strategic objectives in the fight for the soul of America. Are we going to have a free, fair, and open marketplace of ideas where the competition of ideas will lead us to the truth, or are we going to be spoon-fed a narrative by federal bureaucrats and left-wing progressive advocacy groups? I mean, that's what's at stake here. Again, when I say that Missouri v. Biden is the most important First Amendment suit in this nation's history, that's a direct quote from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and let's put that in context. You know, in the late 1700s, the Federalists under our second president of the United States, John Adams, enacted the Alien and Sedition Act that allowed the president to imprison anyone who disagreed with the Federalists' foreign policy. That was bad enough, but at least Congress authorized it. What's going on here is in the shadows, the shadowy corridors of the federal bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., and many Americans who've been silenced or whose speech has been stifled on big tech don't know that it happened because they were shadow banned or deplatformed without knowing it.
We're going to take a very quick commercial break, and we'll be back on the other side.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
You know, we love to cover a lot of different topics on this show. I love to kind of mesh a little bit of culture with politics. And one of the best ways to discuss that, especially in today's culture, is in the education space. And we are seeing discrimination across the board. We're also seeing a lot of changes in education. People who are kind of starting to ask questions about public school systems, especially since COVID, knowing what their children are being taught and knowing what's happening and being discussed in the classroom. And I guess that was one of the silver linings of COVID, is that parents were forced to really take a closer look at what was happening in the classroom. And as a result, many of them are considering other options. But you also see the culture of what's happening on campuses today, and not just in grade school, but especially on college campuses. And I am a firm believer in the fact that we shouldn't know the political affiliations of our professors. And if we do, it really just shouldn't matter to how the class is taught, what is taught in the class, and just the content of conversations that happen within that space. So I am honored to bring in my next guest. He is Will Trockman. He's the general counsel for Mountain States Legal Foundation. He also served in the Department of Education as deputy assistant secretary in the Office for Civil Rights. He clerked on the circuit court, and he is just all around a wonderful person to talk to us about all of this. Will, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much. Greetings from Denver, Colorado.
Absolutely. I love Colorado. It is such a spectacular place, as is California, where you are from and where I live. And I want to talk to you about this Berkeley story in just a moment. But can you just kind of give us a general rundown of who you are, what you've done, some of the work you're most proud of?
Sure. So I'm the general counsel of Mountain States Legal Foundation. We're a 501c3 nonprofit law firm. So we litigate. We're part of the conservative liberty movement. We're not political. We don't endorse candidates. We don't endorse bills or lobby. But we litigate against the Biden administration and against state governments and localities that try to suppress your constitutional rights. So our main areas of focus are the First Amendment, rights to free speech and association, the Second Amendment, right to keep and bear arms, natural rights like private property and natural resources, and then equal protection and civil rights, which is where my specialty lies.
I love that. And everything you talk about seems like it lines up with what we are seeing in culture right now, which is, I just want the government to leave me alone. And we are moving into this space that almost seems like it harkens back to 240 or so years ago, when our founding fathers really just wanted to be left alone. But it seems like this administration especially is pushing in the opposite direction. So I wanted to ask you about this UC Berkeley situation. Of course, Berkeley, which for a long time up until recently was hailed as a bastion of free speech and where students could disagree and they could have conversations out on the concourse and in the courtyards, and they could vehemently disagree, even shout sometimes. But it was considered to be one of these places where that could happen. Well, apparently, unless you are a person of color, if you're a part of the BIPOC community, you can't farm on this community land that, as I understand it, Will, is not necessarily on campus, but it's part sponsored by Berkeley. It's a student organization that runs it. Is that right?
It's part of the College of Natural Resources. So, yes, it's run by community members on the ground. But because the university, a public institution, oversees it and has an affiliation with it, it's bound by the Constitution and by the obligation not to discriminate based on race.
I love that. And that's such a wonderful opportunity for students, because, you know, obviously there are important things that you learn in the classroom, but there are also important things that as a student body you want to learn about as well. And gardening and having this farmland, I would think, is something that would be valuable to all students. But there is a certain class of people at Berkeley who are not welcome. Isn't that right?
Yeah, well, so I agree with you in the abstract. It would be nice if, you know, students could learn how to garden and farm. I don't know that there's a lot of, you know, true, genuine traditional learning happening. It seems like it's sort of a commune where people go to be a part of a left-wing movement. But in yeah. Indiana, yes, you are right. on Saturdays, it's a BIPOC-only day, and we have a whistleblower, thankfully, who reached out to Mountain States and said, look, you know, I believe in this farm's mission, but I'm not willing to stay silent anymore. And so that person, who shall remain nameless, reached out to us, sent us the documents that proved that Saturdays were BIPOC only days. And so we filed a complaint, not a lawsuit, but a complaint with the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, which is where I used to work. And so that complaint is now pending. And I think it's got a pretty good chance, given how cut and dry the race discrimination here is in this context.
Absolutely. So when this whistleblower came to you, it wasn't just that there was an unspoken sentiment that white students were not welcome on Saturdays. This was actually codified in a document.
So it is a rule, and they're very coy about it. So if you request through the website, I'd like to come on Saturday and you know, have a party there or have an event there, then they will convey to you either verbally or some other way that Saturdays are really a BIPOC only day, and they're trying to support, you know, non-whites in that mission. It was actually very hard to find any official documents. Thankfully, we had a text message that, you know, confessed essentially that this mm-hmm. was the policy. But it's obvious that they were being coy about it on purpose, to the point where it took a little while for us to find the smoking gun.
Okay. And I want to get into a little bit of the fundamentals about the case. What is the court venue for this? Because obviously here in California, we have a lot of liberal judges. What's the venue for this?
So this is not your traditional lawsuit in federal court. This is an administrative complaint with the Department of Education. The department has jurisdiction over educational institutions that are violating civil rights laws. So I'm sure you've heard of Title IX, which enforces equal opportunities in sports.
Right.
And so if a school isn't complying with Title IX, you can file a complaint with the Department of Education. The Department of Education opens an investigation. They can withdraw federal funds, which is a significant hammer to have. And so schools tend to recognize the power that the department has and come into compliance quickly so as not to lose those funds. Here, we've said there's a violation of a different civil rights law, Title VI, which bars race discrimination in education. And so we filed our complaint last Monday. We already know from our whistleblower that the university is panicking and that the farm is pointing fingers at each other and trying to figure out who filed the report. So it's definitely one of those things where we have them to rights. We have the smoking gun and there's really no way of getting out of it.
They should be panicking. Honestly, this is absolutely absurd. What do you think it will take for institutions like Berkeley, like Harvard, like so many of these Ivy League type organizations that used to have such stellar reputations as far as educational institutions? I'm a big fan of creating structures of deterrence preemptively so that this doesn't happen. But this obviously has been happening for a while because we've seen stories like this happen over and over. What do you think it will take for these institutions to finally stop this garbage?
Well, relentlessness on our part and embarrassment on their part. You know, there's really each individual case is a small price to pay in the scheme of things for a university to be able to virtue signal and say, we care so much about diversity and equity and inclusion. And maybe they'll come into compliance here and hope that this is the last time they hear from me. That's certainly not going to be the case. We have another complaint already pending and opened for investigation on their Blacks only graduation ceremony. So this is not something that's, isolated to a farm in Berkeley. This is across the country, as you allude to, at Harvard and throughout the Ivy Leagues. The focus is an obsession on race and sex and all these things that divide us that are really irrelevant to our merit. And so it takes lawsuit after lawsuit, complaint after complaint. And until the universities pay a tangible price for their misconduct, they're going to keep doing it because it's the price of doing business for the time being.
Yeah, it's been incredible to watch. When I was in college, I went to Auburn University, and I never knew any political affiliation of any of my professors. And for 4 of my 5 years at Auburn, I was a music major. So you can just imagine that they were all liberal, but I never knew it. And we've got to get back to that. I know that in response to this complaint, you said that Berkeley specifically, but I think this reigns supreme in all liberal education right now. They think that racial segregation is progressive now, but it's no different from segregation of the past. I see that as plainly as can be. And I think that most people who care about the Constitution and care about free speech and care about treating people equally based on the content of their character, not the color of their skin, people see that plainly. Why is it so hard for them to grasp the concept that this is just the same type of racism?
I think they have a reflexive ability to ignore reality. They're able to justify and live with the cognitive dissonance that they think that left-wing values are so important that they don't mind accidentally reliving the days of the past. In fact, some of the people who have commented on this story on Twitter have said, if they were really thinking about it and they wanted to have only African-Americans work a farm on Saturdays, that actually rings of slavery. And, the idea that this is actually their goal because they've accidentally walked into this situation, it just demonstrates the absurdity of the situation. So I think they're so blinded by their political beliefs and their ideological obsession with non-merit metrics that they don't see what they're actually doing. And so when they agree with the white supremacist that race is the most important thing and we should focus more on race, they don't actually understand that what they're doing is echoing the same talking points of yesteryear or the racists of today. They are now the segregationists of 2024.
Yeah, it's just so one-sided. Just as an anecdotal story on the side, I live here in Los Angeles, and last week I was out at a restaurant, and there was a booth set up by some ACLU representatives on the street, and they were just, handing out flyers and asking for donations, telling people to go to the website. And instead of really kicking the hornet's nest, I decided to just thank them for their organization defending the National Rifle Association. And this is a case I'm sure you're familiar with, but for our audience who doesn't know, it pertains to a free speech situation where you've got banking institutions who are closing the accounts of NRA members in the organization. And these two gals were flabbergasted that the ACLU is defending the NRA. And I tell that story because I want to ask you, Will, being in the legal profession, we just saw the disbarment of John Eastman, and we've seen the treatment of conservative attorneys, even non-quote unquote conservative attorneys like Alan Dershowitz, who even has a term for what's happening to attorneys called getting dershed. And when it comes to, even if you're not a conservative attorney, even if you're just someone who stands by the Constitution, who as someone who believes in it, you defend it. Are you concerned as someone in the legal sphere that there can someday be some type of opprobrium or pushback?
Well, everyone in the conservative legal movement has a target on their back. That's the deal you make for fighting for liberty and for being the Constitution's lawyer. You know that there are people who fiercely disagree with you and that they're ideologically committed to destroying not just your legal arguments, but you personally. And so that's just part of the, you know, what you live with as a conservative attorney in the movement. John Eastman, who's my co-counsel on the Gadsden Flag case out here in Colorado, I know that not just him, but many of the lawyers who worked for President Trump are subjected to bar and ethics complaints. You know, I'm sure I've had a few bar complaints filed against me. Thankfully, nothing that has ever risen to the level of even getting to my attention. But there is a movement out there that wants to make it hard to be a conservative, to represent President Trump, to represent the Constitution, to fight back against the ideological beliefs of the far left right now. And so it is a problem. You know, we often say, well, everyone deserves a lawyer. You know, even the detainees at Guantanamo Bay had lawyers. And that was
right.
That was, you know, valuable to us as a society to have an adversarial justice system. But that isn't where people are falling on the right-left issues. So if President Trump has a legal issue, he has to really scrounge for lawyers who are willing to walk into a buzzsaw of publicity, of the chance of ethics complaints. And so there is an asymmetry there that is dangerous and that I, you know, in my heart of hearts believe has a real danger to impact our justice system in the long term.
It is terrifying. And it's especially terrifying to me when it's a top-down situation where the Department of Justice is, you know, for example, the documents case down in Florida, you have, I know you clerked on the circuit court, you have circuit court judge Aileen Cannon involved in this documents case up against Jack Smith, the special counsel in the case who is effectively representing the Department of Justice. And I've never seen a dynamic. I mean, I read the document that Jack Smith put out with regards to jury instructions. And I've never seen that level of vitriol just dripping off the page with Judge Aileen Cannon on the other end of that. It is such a bizarre dynamic, don't you think?
Well, I should say, again, we're a 501c3. We don't endorse candidates or President Trump.
Right.
Judge Cannon is the district court judge in Florida. I'm not completely familiar with the content of the jury instructions. I've seen a few of the reports. But here you have a situation where you have one prosecutor, Jack Smith, who his whole job is to go after President Trump. He lives, you know, 8 to 6 every day looking for ways to prosecute President Trump. That is his official role as special counsel. And as Justice Scalia remarked in famous dissent back in the 1990s, it is absurd that you would have one person whose entire job is to look for crimes, because all of us are sort of guilty, right? Of you know, there's 10,000 federal crimes. We've all committed a federal crime every day. And to have one person whose entire role in their professional career is to target an individual, and particularly an individual who's running for president, it just screams injustice to me.
It's been incredible to watch. I want to bring the conversation back around to education, because you are a legal eagle, especially in that space. And I know when you were general counsel for Douglas County Schools, one of the focuses was school choice. And we are seeing right now, as I looked at the top of the podcast, we're seeing so many parents who are now realizing that what the Department of Education and what their individual school districts are teaching their children is not necessarily fruitful or conducive to a contributory life in the future. Why do you think is that? Why you think there are so many parents who are moving into the school choice space, even homeschooling? I mean, so many parents are moving towards homeschooling or co-op homeschools or other forms, other means of educating their children.
Yes, absolutely. I completely think that that is the case. I agree with you. You know, the silver lining of COVID-19, which is almost 5 years, between the back to the
right,
start.
Yeah, now. Since then.
Yeah. I mean, it's very hard as a parent. You're overwhelmed with work, with, you know, putting food on the table, to know exactly what your children are learning. And then all of a sudden you have remote education and you can see the teacher teaching your child. And then you can see the official statements of the teachers unions against capitalism in favor of quote unquote diversity and race consciousness. And then you know what's actually happening to your kids. Now, I should say, I'm not one of those folks who thinks that every conservative should withdraw their kids from public schools. I don't want to leave the children to the wolves. I want.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I want active conservative parents in public schools around the country, including in my hometown of Denver,
yes,
where we send our kids to public school and we're active participants there. But yes, homeschooling, charter schools, private schools are on the rise because parents are getting involved and more engaged in their kids' education. Just ironically, I was talking to a parent this morning who's actually left wing, who was saying, I really love school choice because if the public schools ever get too conservative for me, I can homeschool. And I was like, what world are you coming from that the public schools are too conservative for you?
I know.
But just the general idea of like school choice benefits us all. If you are a parent and you are integrated into your child's education and you want something different for them, that is your right as a parent. And you don't have to abide by what the government tells you your kids need to learn. So I'm a major proponent, going back to my days in Douglas County and before, of school choice and parental involvement in education.
Yeah. And you're especially seeing that surge in communities of color and urban communities because they recognize how, frankly, crappy public schools are in their area. And they really want to make use of some type of educational savings account and send their kids somewhere where they can have a great education. But there's so much that needs to be reformed. And I know a part of that, a large part of that is going to be the situation and the dynamic with unions, but we're going to have to save that for another time. Will, I have such respect for you and what you are doing. It is so important. You are such an important voice in the legal community. And I just want you to know that conservatives have your back. And I hope that this dynamic in the legal profession becomes a little bit more equally weighted, because it sure is disgusting to see liberals putting a target on the backs of people like you, who you are the lawyer for the Constitution. I love the way that you put that. That's your client. And I love that.
Well, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Will, very quickly, before we let you go, tell everybody where they can find more about your work.
Right. So we're at Mountain States Legal Foundation. Our website is mslegal.org. Please check it out. Take a look at our cases. If you feel inclined to hit that supporter button, please do that. But even if you don't, we are always looking for very good cases. So if you have a case in the First Amendment, Second Amendment, 14th Amendment sphere, or natural resources and property rights, we would love to hear from you and maybe take your case.
Are people able to donate?
Yes, absolutely. At mslegal.org, there is a donate button. And whether or not you do that, I'd love for people to check us out and look at our cases and send us their good ideas.
Will Schrockman, thank you so much for joining us. And again, everybody go check that out and donate if you would like to and support them. Thanks so much, Will. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a very quick commercial break and then we'll be back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back, everybody, to Furthermore with Amanda Head. As you all know on this show, we love to highlight candidates because this is an election year. This is my bread and butter. I absolutely live for election years. So much crazy stuff happens, and we are about to be barreling down the road directly towards the RNC convention and nominations, and so many primaries are obviously already done with. There are a few more left, but Donald Trump has clinched that nomination effectively until it is officially codified at the RNC convention. But one of these candidates that we want to highlight is Michael Markey Jr. So he's running in a seat in Michigan. It's Michigan 3. And this is one of those seats that the RNC, the national party, has deemed
flippable. Again, currently held by a Democrat, but we're hoping to change that. And Michael, I am so honored to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So why did you decide to run? Because this is, this is such a crazy time in politics. Mm-hmm. Things are pretty gross. You know, when I was growing up, when I was in high school and college, it seemed like there was a lot more civility in politics. And not that I think that we should go back to those days of establishment Republicanism and things like that. But things have gotten wild. Why did you decide to dip your toe in this crazy pool?
Boy, you know, I've heard that question about a million times, and it's certainly one that my wife and I, we talked a lot about and prayed a lot about. But the reality is, so I'm a business person. I actually started my first business when I was 14 years old, buying a crane game and putting Beanie Babies in it, and then bought rental property before I was 15, bought my second before I was 16, and then commercial real estate. And so, I guess the simple thing to say is I know what it's like to sign both the front of a check and the back of a check. I know what it's like to create opportunities, just not for myself, but our community. And I started looking around and, you know, we look at the path our economy is heading down. And, you know, there's a famous Reagan quote that said we can lose all our freedoms in a generation. And I really think what he meant by that was over the course of 80 years. And I've got an 11-year-old daughter. I mean, we've got three kids, but I look at my daughter, she's 11. And we said, you know, if we don't do something about this now, by the time she hits adulthood, those freedoms that we take for granted sometimes could be completely gone. Yeah. So as crazy as things are, and which kind of makes it crazier that you jump in, it was all the more reason why somebody like myself with the background that I have and you know, the God-given skills needed to jump in.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that about looking at your kids and wanting them to grow up in a certain world, because if you ask the same question of your run of the mill Democrat these days, who frankly has been dragged very far to the left, it's never about their kids. But let's face it, because oftentimes they don't have kids or they support abortion, so they don't necessarily support having kids, or, you know, it's someone who's a part of the LGBT community, and it's never about family. It's always about the social justice causes and things like that, that are the really, really diametrically opposed to what our country was founded on. And I love that you talked about how you prayed with your wife, because, you know, I think for so many candidates like yourself, prayer is going to have to get you through the rest of your campaign for sure. All right. I want to talk to you about something that recently happened in Michigan, because we know about what happened to Laken Riley in Athens, Georgia, a devastating story that unfortunately is a symptom of what the problem is, and that is our devastatingly open border. Absolutely disastrous. And Brandon Ortiz Vite is now facing one count each of homicide, carjacking, felony firearm, operating while intoxicated, driving a suspended and revoked license. Tell us about this story, because this almost sounds like it's going in, and it's another Laken Riley situation.
Well, you know, unfortunately, it really is. And I heard on the news yesterday on my way to my office about that the Michigan police, I don't remember if it was county or state, but that they had somebody detained for a murder. And, you know, we're seeing the exact same thing unfold right here. And this is why we have to, you know, everyone kind of thinks they're immune or separated from these border issues, but it's hitting, you know, now states as far north as Michigan. And my opponent, Hillary Scolton, before she ran for Congress, or I should say before she got in Congress, while she was running, she was advocating for Kent County to be a sanctuary county. And this murder happened right here in Kent County. And so we're seeing firsthand our community, unfortunately, on, you know, the dangers of these kind of policies that Democrats want to push, because they would rather give rights to non-Americans before they protect the rights and safety of Americans. And we can't have that.
Why do you think this story hasn't gotten as much traction as the Laken Riley story?
Well, I think part of it, because it just came out yesterday that this was an illegal immigrant involved. And I think to a degree that they've tried to keep the details, or maybe the details are just coming out slowly. But I do think this is going to be something that grabs national headlines, especially when you look at right here in the third district. Like, you open this up saying that this is one of the few flip seats in the country. And here we've got a representative of Congress who is encouraging the type of policies that lead to these type of outcomes. So I do think this is going to be something that the entire country is going to know about.
All right. So let's think hypothetically. You win Michigan 3, you go to Congress, you take that seat of a Democrat, and other Republicans take Democrat seats, and there's a comfortable majority for Republicans in the House. Because honestly, with all the crises in this country, you know, I think that if things go well and the winds are in our favor, that could happen in November. How would you, as the representative of Michigan 3, help to push along? You know, we had HR2 that was incredible legislation with respect to securing the border. Obviously, it's chilling in the Senate. They can't get it passed out of the Senate because Democrats seem pretty opposed to it. What would you do in Congress to push this along?
Well, I will work with my fellow Republicans to put in legislation that we can get passed. But see, my border policy has been very simple, and it's something that people can remember. It's number one. It's a 3-point, and everyone will remember it. It's number one. If you deserve to get in, we'll let you in. Number two, if you don't, we won't. And three, if you're here illegally, it's time to go home. I mean, that's as simple as we can make, and that's what we have to focus on. See, the way I explain it to people is, it's like, you know, I'm a huge fan of immigration when they come through the front door. When they come through the front door, we'll shake their hand, we'll greet them, because these are people who want to come here legally, who want to be a part of America, who want to live the American dream, and they want to help, you know, promote American, you know, ideals. But what I'm not okay with is what Hillary Scolton and Rashida Tlaib and President Biden have done. They propped open the back door. They're inviting people to break the rules. They're inviting people to come illegally. They're inviting people to sneak in. And those are the type of people that don't add to our society. They're not benefiting. They're not trying to live the American dream. So there's a right way to do immigration, and there's a wrong way. And clearly the path we're on right now is the absolute wrong way.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people make the argument that the reason Democrats want to open the floodgates of illegal immigration is because they are losing constituents in traditionally Democrat voting demographics. Black Americans, Hispanic Americans who are legal immigrants, Americans of all stripes. Do you think that's true?
You know, I hate to speculate why the Democrats are going to do something that makes no logical sense. Yeah. You know, that seems to me like that's a recipe for disaster. But what I do know is this: we have to get it under control. We cannot have an open border the way we have. We've got $34 trillion of debt. We're gaining an extra trillion every 140 days. These are not sustainable policies. And to make it even worse, we're borrowing from China to give to people that are coming here illegally to be able to, you know, pay for free goods and services while we're not taking care of our veterans. So there's a lot of problems we have, but we got to focus on the ones that we can take care of right now.
Absolutely. I want to ask about some issues that are Michigan centric. It's been really interesting to see the political direction of unions like United Auto Workers. You have the president who came out and endorsed the Biden administration, which was pretty expected. You know, you expect unions like that that have been voting and endorsing Democrats for half a century at least to go in that direction. But he, not long after, I think it was within days after endorsing Joe Biden, said, look, a lot of my workers don't feel the way that I do. That's not the direction they're going to go because of Biden's policies. Not only, you know, the expatriating of companies abroad, sending them to Mexico, but the green energy issues that are suppressing the economy and the working economy for Michiganders.
Well, and we have, I've been a very big vocal critic of some of these policies. I mean, right here in Michigan, not too far from our district, is the Gochin Electric battery plant. Mm-hmm. And they're throwing it into the community against the community's will. It's a company that's owned by the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party does not listen to the world environmental standards that are already out there. And they're going to allow them to tap into our natural resources, our natural water source that then flows back into Lake Michigan. So here you have a case where the local community doesn't want it, but you've got Democratic leadership like Governor Whitmer, who is pushing it through so that she can maybe, I don't know, you know, say she has a win on the national stage and trying to make prop up her own resume for president. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. And I mean, take it a step further. I think what really bothers me as a finance person, I mean, I'm pretty young. I mean, I just turned 40, but I've been running a business for over 20 years. I've been running a financial practice for almost 20 years. And what really gets me here is the fact that we're giving hundreds of millions of dollars of tax subsidies to then give to a foreign country to replace American workers. It's kind of a triple negative.
Yeah. Is that something that, you look at the Democrat heavy areas of Michigan, especially in Detroit? I mean, we have seen in a lot of these deep blue cities, Chicago, Detroit, to some degree, New York, even here in Los Angeles, we've got Americans who have voted Democrat their whole lives, who are dealing with crime, with economic issues, obviously illegal immigration. Do you feel that there's a bit of a turn happening in some of these deep blue areas of Michigan?
I think people are opening their eyes, and I do think there's a turn. And I think actually where a lot of the opportunity, and this is just my opinion, lies is with the millennial voters.
Yeah.
My wife and I were at the older end of millennials, and but millennials, people say, often are too ideological. They're blue voters. They've gone Democrat. I think there's a lot of millennials out there who are finding that they're maybe more socially liberal, but they're fiscally conservative. And that's one of the things as a Republican Party, we got to bring them in. We need their vote. We're not going to agree on everything. And that's probably, I think, one of our struggles as Republicans is we have a lot of unique diversity of thought. That's great. We should celebrate that. But then when it comes time to coalescing and coming together, we agree on 85% of the issues. We need to get together and stay together and win these races that we can. And I think millennials will be a big one. I think some of the inner cities, like you just described. But to do that, what that means is we got to start talking about actual solutions. And here's things we can implement. And I'll give you an example of that, like not to toot my own horn, but being an advisor, we released a proposal that said, let's get rid of the early distribution penalties on retirement accounts. Because I've watched people have to dip into the retirement accounts early. They never want to. They understand it's a bad thing, that they're kind of robbing their future. But for some reason, the government puts an arbitrary extra 10% penalty on it. So here you got somebody struggling. They're dipping into an account they don't want to dip into to begin with. And then the government says, here's an extra penalty for what? It'd be like getting a divorce and the government penalizes you $1,000 to tell you, how you screwed up.
Yeah, it's incredible to see. And I'm with you. I'm on the older end of the millennial spectrum. It's been really interesting to see our generation and the political direction they're going. But you look at Gen Z, the generation of your kids. And I think it was a USA Today Suffolk University poll back in January that showed that Trump actually had 3 points on Biden with the youth vote. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that is because President Trump understands social media. He understands, and this is what drives people nuts. He understands the type of posts. He understands the type of quotes that will go viral and that will kind of work with the algorithms on these platforms. And so we've got our youth then seeing it because it's getting reposted over and over and over and it's going viral. So, I mean, that's probably would be, just from a very simplistic way of looking at it. I think that's probably why the youth are leaning in favor.
Yeah. Michael, I love your family values. I love what you said about signing the front and the back of the check, because to me, that shows someone who's practically minded, who's been on both sides of things. And I think that that's probably something your possible constituents and voters appreciate. When you're out on, when you're out on a stop and you're giving a rally or you're speaking to voters, what's the number one thing you hear most often from your constituents that they're concerned about?
So here in Michigan, in our third district, I mean, I think probably with what just happened, this is going to change, right? Immigration is now going to go back to the top. But we had a school district that was helping a child transition to the other gender and did so without telling the parents, actually did so while keeping the parents out of it. So that's been a big issue here. And it's a stand that I've taken because, again, I've got 3 kids. It's boy, girl, boy. But I look at it and say, you know what? This isn't controversial. My daughter's not going to play against guys. She's not going to play against a guy who suddenly has said, hey, I want to transition and be playing female sports.
Amen.
It's not right. And at the university level, I mean, I was a Division I athlete. I played baseball. You can't really tell anymore. I've lost the baseball shape. but I look at it and go, Title IX is a congressional law. And suddenly the White House is trying to step in and they're trying to make all these changes to Title IX. No, leave it to the legislative branch that belongs with Congress. And what I would like to do is say any school who decides that they're going to allow these males to transition and play in female sports, we're going to take away your Title IX funding because you no longer are adherence to Title IX. And so basically force those schools to become private universities, private colleges. And I have a feeling that this moral high ground that these institutions are taking suddenly goes away when they're when they're left with the bill. It's funny how that works so many times.
Isn't it? Yeah. Gosh. Oh, for parents in America, it is a scary time. And I certainly hope things turn around and it starts with seats like Michigan 3. Michael, tell everybody where they can find out more about your campaign and donate.
Yeah. So I ask you, follow us. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. But probably the easiest way to follow us is MichaelMarkeyJr.com. So that's Michael, MarkeyJr.com. And what I ask for people is, we all know that it takes money to win. We've been very fortunate. We're leading in total fundraising and small dollar fundraising endorsements. We're really feeling like this is a seat that's turning around. And our seat's been Republican for 101 out of 104 years. So this is certainly one we can grab. But for a lot of people listening, I know you've heard these promises before. So what I ask you for is, start with $20, $30. Give us a reoccurring donation because you can hold us accountable then. Yeah. And what I love about that as a former athlete and really as a business owner, we love feedback. And I guess politicians don't like feedback, but I do, because if I went to the field on a Saturday and all week in practice, the coach was giving me praise, I would have been pretty irritated that I wasn't in the starting lineup. So Athletes love feedback. Business owners, we love feedback. So when you start with us on a reoccurring donation of 20, 30, 50 bucks, then if we do something you don't like, let us know. I'm not saying that we'll change it, but I want to know how people are feeling. And the best way for people to get engaged in our campaign, it's like anything else, is to be a part of it. So if you're out of the state, you're out of the district, being a part of it means, send us some of your dollars, because how you win these are dollars and doors. And so we need dollars so we can have people out there knocking on doors. Our volunteers have already started. We still have snow here in Michigan, but we've been knocking on every door we can. This is one of those races we're going to pick up. And we just need everyone's help.
Awesome. MichaelMarkeyJr.com. Everybody go check out his campaign. Michael, it was an honor to have you on. We wish you the best of luck. We're going to get you on the TV show soon and we'll talk to you then.
Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Michael. Same to you.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Furthermore with Amanda Head. As I told you guys in the very first episode on day one, which was really only 2 days ago, for my very first podcast, I know you have so many options of places where you can go to watch the news, to listen to the news, to listen to commentary. And I am absolutely honored that you have chosen to give my podcast a try. And I am going to do my best to put out incredible information, pertinent information, stuff that I think is interesting and juicy, and things that I know are important to the lives of everyday Americans. So with that all said, again, I really appreciate you being here. I'm going to be back on Friday with more jam-packed guests and incredible interviews. So everybody have a great night. We'll see you soon.